would have to help if more journalists would be keen on getting inside and telling those stories.
I think that's right, although I do think that it takes going to these places and talking to people, spending time. This was a slowly reported piece of journalism, a piece of journalism I found not because I was looking for this exact story, but because I went trying to figure out what was going on, and I found it. I think that it takes time. It takes asking lots of questions and listening very hard for a while.
We've been speaking with Seth Fried Wessler. You can find his piece, The True Story of a Texas Prison Riot, on thenation.com. Seth Fried Wessler, thank you so much for joining us today on Counterspin.
Great to be here. Thanks so much.
And that's it for Counterspin for this week. Counterspin is produced by FAIR, the National Media Watch Group based in New York. If you missed part of today's show or you'd like to hear previous shows, you can find those on FAIR's website. It's FAIR.org. And the website's also the place to sign up for FAIR's Action Alert Network and to show support for the group if you're so inclined. The show is engineered by Kelly Spivey. I'm Janine Jackson. Thanks for listening to Counterspin.
Good evening, Portland. This is KBOO Portland. The time is 6 o'clock. And coming up next tonight on Bread and Roses, Feminist News and Public Affairs, we have for the first time a series of kitchen table conversations with host Mary Postlewaite. She's going to interview two Bread and Roses collective members about who they are, their feminist ideas, and their involvement with the collective. So stay tuned for that right after these messages.
Attention KABU members and listeners. The KABU Foundation is seeking to fill four upcoming vacancies on the Board of Directors. Terms run 3 years, beginning on October 1st. The nomination packet, due July 11th, is posted on the KABU website and paper copies are available at the station. Candidates must submit the completed nomination packet via email to kabucommunity@gmail.com or mail or drop off the completed nomination packet, care of Timothy Welp, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Incomplete forms will not be considered as fulfilling the statement of interest requirement by the KABU bylaws. Packets are due by Saturday, July 11th. The candidate statements submitted as part of the nomination packet will be posted to KABU's website, and candidates will be expected to participate in an interview for broadcast and a Q&A session at the annual meeting. For more information, please contact the nominating committee at kabucommunity@gmail.com.
This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Portland Saturday Market, From Our Hands to Yours, celebrating 42 years of American arts and crafts, freshly prepared foods with an international flavor, and local music every Saturday and Sunday through Christmas Eve. Local artisans, international food, live music, PortlandSaturdayMarket.com. And this program has also been made possible by a grant from People's Food Co-op, a community-owned, values-driven cooperative striving to provide access to whole foods that customers can trust. People's features farm-direct organic produce, bulk foods, a weekly year-round farmers market, and everyone is welcome. Located at Southeast 21st and Tibbetts Street between Division and Powell. More information at peoples.coop.
At the dawn of the day, all the darkened kitchens, the near lost grave, all touched by the radiance that the sun discloses. Oh, hear the people singing.
Welcome to Bread and Roses, Feminist News and Public Affairs on KBOO Airwaves since 1978, the longest-running feminist news radio program in the country. Connect with Bread and Roses on KBOO website at kboo.fm/breadandroses, where you can access our podcasts and share feedback, show ideas. And like us on Facebook, KBOO Bread and Roses. Bread and Roses is shared among a collective of women-identified radio activists. And if you're interested in joining us as a producer, a host, or engineer, no experience necessary, please contact KBOO's volunteer coordinator, Ani Hines, volunteer at kboo.org, or call KBOO at 503-231-8032, extension 213. I'll be your host this week. My name is Mary Postlewaite. In studio, we have Delphine Crescenzo.
Hello.
And Jordan Michelle. How are you guys doing today?
Wonderful. How are
I'm
you?
I'm great.
Good. So, for our listeners, we're going to do something just a little bit different. We're going to call this Kitchen Table Talk. So, I want our listeners to get to know us just a little bit better. Mm-hmm. You know, coming from somebody who listens to talk radio, I want to know who I'm listening to. So I decided to have a couple people come in and just tell you guys a little bit about who we are, where we come from, and what makes us just like you. So Jordan, why don't we start with you? Why don't you tell us a little bit about where you come from and who you are?
Okay. Well, I was born in Los Angeles, California. I come from African American descent, and growing up, I lived in Inglewood, California, which is technically not the best area in Los Angeles, and then moved to the suburbs of outskirts of Los Angeles, and it was an all-white neighborhood. When I moved, I was in the fifth grade, and my sister was in the first grade, and we literally were the only black kids in the entire K through fifth grade school.
Wow.
Like the entire school. You know, this is including mixed kids. You know, there weren't even any mixed children at this elementary school, you know? So for my sister and I, it was definitely a culture shock because, you know, we came from a private school where it was predominantly black kids, you know? And when we went to middle school, you know, that's where it really was really hard on me. I endured lots of racial slurs, you know, and was bullied really, really bad in middle school. And, you know, that usually is the awkward stage, but it was twice as bad because I was the minority within my school. But what's interesting is about my upbringing is that I was also a child television star.
You were?
Yeah.
Learning something new today, folks.
A lot of people who've seen me would consider a star, but, you know, I did have lots of experience. When I was 9 years old, I appeared on my first show, which is called The Parkers, and I'm really known for my roles on That's So Raven, which is a popular Disney Channel show.
Maybe that's where I've seen you before. That's So Raven.
Yes, That's So Raven. And I played one of the main characters, Raven's little brother, Corey. I played his girlfriend, and I have about 8 episodes in the show. And it was a really, really cool experience. And just being in the industry was really fun. I played in the movie Dodgeball as one of the Girl Scouts in that film, and a movie called The Shaggy Dog. And then I was the Kool-Aid girl growing up in commercials. So I had a pretty exciting childhood, like, yeah, amongst all of that, you know? And a lot of it was, okay, I would go to school and you would expect that I would get so much love, you know, like, oh, I saw you on TV last night type thing. And I did. But at the same time, people reverse that into hate, like, yeah, you jealousy. Know, and jealousy and all that. And especially being at the middle school, when I was acting in Los Angeles, oh, I would come to school and be like the it person, you know what I mean? So just seeing those dynamics growing up, like, I really learned a lot about myself, about my culture, just to embrace myself and to love myself and just disregard all that hate, you know? But it definitely throughout middle school and throughout elementary school and throughout high school, you know, I really longed to go to an all-Black university. So I applied for, like, Spelman and Howard and all those other things. And then I realized I feel like I just endure another culture shock, you know, being amongst all my people and haven't been around them in so long, you know, fifth through high school, you know, that's a lot of time not being around my people. So I attended Arizona State University and kind of found my way in there and got involved with a lot of Black organizations and I was welcomed and, you know, and I don't know. I had a great college experience, a really great college experience. And now I'm just going into the career world, hopefully get back into entertainment. But okay. that was my life.
Okay, well, yeah. I'm sorry to hear that you struggled like you did.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of can feel your pain.
Mm-hmm.
Growing up predominantly white,
mm-hmm.
I have biracial children.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've kind of experienced the hate also.
Mm-hmm.
Being a white woman with biracial children,
mm-hmm.
you know, I was the race traitor.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. I kind of feel your experience.
Yeah.
So what is it that brought you to radio?
Well, because I have experience in television and film and things like that, when I was presented the opportunity to be a part of Cable, I was like, wow, you know, that's a whole nother field that I've never, you know, looked into. And then I read on Bread and Roses and I love the concept. I love what, you know, Bread and Roses represents. And I just thought, wow, I can be that Black voice for Black women. You know, and also being new to Portland, I've been looking for, you know, that outlet out here, and I haven't found that. So I'm hoping that this could be the way for us, so I can connect with the Black community and just be that silent voice, mm-hmm. you know, for Portland, hopefully.
All right.
Yeah.
Delphine. Can you tell us a little bit about your background? Where do you come
from?
Yeah,
Dale.
Okay, this is a completely different story. So I grew up in the south of France, southeast, so on the Mediterranean seacoast. My ancestors are mainly from Sicily or Italy. That's like more recent ancestors, you know. Sicily and Italy and the south of France have been all kinds of people have lived in that area. And so this is kind of like the cultural and the culture that I claim, right, is one of Provence, which is the region where I'm from, and it's a region that has been influenced a lot by kind of that this Mediterranean culture coming across from Africa, and at the same time being very like sea centered, like the water mm-hmm. is like huge,
mm-hmm.
And also. I grew up, so my father is from Marseille and my mom is from Aix-en-Provence. So that's kind of like these two cities. They're like 20 minutes apart, you know. So that's kind of like where I spend most of my time. And Aix-en-Provence is also a water city because Aix is the word for water in Provençal, which is the language from the region where I'm from. And so it was hot springs, you know, there are natural hot springs in the town. And of course, now everything is diverted for the spa where you have to spend so much money. And so so I grew up in a rural environment, both on my father's side and on my mom's side, you know, kind of working class folks. Very rural. And I grew up on a farm. My mom's dad had a farm. And that very much influenced a lot of my life until today. I still grow a lot of my food. It's still kind of my way of connecting, you know, to not just, you know, my roots, personal roots, but also to the land, you mm-hmm. know, where we all come from. And so my journey has been, you know, one of curiosity, like from a very young age. Like my mom would say, you know, every time the phone rang, Del be there asking, who is it? So I'm super curious. And so that led me to, you know, want to explore and want to learn more about other languages, other cultures, and I was very lucky that the south of France was such a rich, richly diverse area. There's lots of folks that come from North Africa, so France had colonies in Morocco, Algeria, Tunisia, also other sub-Saharan African countries, such as Senegal, etc. So the streets of France are kind of, you know, populated by waves of immigrants, whether they be from Spain or Portugal or Italy or Sicily, like my grandparents, for example, came to France in the 50s, or, you know, more recent immigrants from Northern Africa and other African countries. So the opportunities to learn and to be exposed to other cultures was kind of an everyday occurrence.
For sure.
Right? Wow. Like my neighbors, when I grew up, so I don't know, from like age 4 to 10, I lived in this project where, you know, my across the way, the folks were from Laos, and you know, next door was folks from Algeria. So, you know, and we were kind of like Italian, Sicilian, more cultural, mm-hmm. you know. So it was, you know, kind of huge. And that's something that I really understood the value of until much later on in life, when things became, you know, political, and when I was exposed to discrimination and injustice and racism. And mm-hmm. so when that happened, it became very important to me to spend more time educating myself so that I could, you know, help support educating others. Mm-hmm. I was always very frustrated with, you know, injustices and discrimination. And my parents, to be honest, didn't really know how to support me. It was kind of something that was brand new to them. You know, they were kind of from a mentality of, you know, our parents really struggled. They were immigrants. They were like farmers. And we really want the best for our children. So they were very focused on, you know, their careers and building a house for us so we wouldn't live in the project the whole time, saving money and, you know, doing all these things, sacrificing a lot also mm-hmm. so that we could have. And I think that all of this I'm so thankful for because thanks to their stability and to their desire to see me realize my dreams, then they supported me moving abroad. Mm-hmm. So, I was always very much into American culture. I mean, like, you know, Mariah Carey was like the thing when I was like a teenager. I went to see in concerts, you know, all of that stuff. But then as I, you know, got to age 15, then hip hop became huge for me. And the hip hop culture was just, it seemed to me that it was bringing something to my life that I've been looking for. Not just a way to express yourself, but a way to talk about very deep issues, right? Mm-hmm. Issues such as racism, mm-hmm. such as all of this. And all mm-hmm. of a sudden, hip hop just became a way that I could finally, you know, help express some of the frustrations. So I never rapped, but I was a break dancer.
Oh.
And
really?
I also have my claim to fame.
Oh, wow.
So awesome. when I was 16, 17, me and my friend had a little dance duo. So we would like come up with our own choreographies mm-hmm. and stuff, and we would perform at all kind of like hip hop festivals
that
and
so cool.
kind of like neighborhoods, little you know, gatherings that they would have, and it was for me kind of like this the push, right, to really want to know more and learn more and understand more about American cultures, but more importantly, the race relations, right? I was super interested. And I think that I was also interested because it was not talked about in my country, right? Like France has a very terrible history, but at the same time, we don't talk about it as openly because, for example, even though the French were involved in slavery, it didn't take place on French soil. Therefore, it's not something that we have, you know, a whole lot of remnants of, right? Mm-hmm. And the same with the empire, right? Mm-hmm. Like France was so present, as I said, Algeria, Tunisia, Morocco, Senegal, Mali, Congo, so many, all over freaking Africa. Mm-hmm. And you know, stealing resources, destroying cultures, you know, horrible stuff. And still, again, because we're not, you know, unfortunately paying the consequences of these terrible actions like the United States are for, you know, what happened to the natives or mm-hmm. the enslavements mm-hmm. of people of African descent. then, you know, the conversation is not as easy to have. However, with the influx of immigrants who are from these countries that have been destroyed, right, there's not a whole lot left. And economic empowerment is becoming really impossible. I mean, just look in the news, there's like migrants that are flooding, you know, the Mediterranean Sea right now from Syria and all these countries. So it was, you know, it became for me a desire to learn more about, you know, my own history and the history of French people through learning kind of like what has been the history of America and also Native American culture and I would say spirituality back in the days, even though now I completely understand how inappropriate it is for a white person to have ideas of wanting to maybe be Native or aspiring to some of these ideas, right? I've been educated since by some amazing Native people. and so when I was 19, I first came to the U.S. and I spent a year, learned English, became bilingual, and got my first experience.
Cool.
Well, first of all, my first experience away from my family, and that was an amazing feeling of like understanding I can be on my own and I can be okay, right? Even though it's a different country and all of that. And so coming back to France after this 1 year of being an au pair, so I was a nanny, you know, doing the regular thing, which I would suggest to anybody who is trying to get away, you know, in a cheap fashion to be introduced to a culture. It's a great way, the au pair system. And so I, what's up, Jordan?
What state did you go to?
I was in New York.
New York.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I was in Westchester County in New York, so the wealthiest county. I worked for some wealthy, very wealthy people who had a house that had no angles. Everything was round in the house. Dome for the ceiling. Anyway, rich people.
Yeah,
that's kinda neat.
It was kind of neat, actually.
I used to have round furniture. I guess that would have fit perfectly.
Yeah, it would have fit perfectly. The house was kind of like a, you know, almost like a treat for all of my friends to come visit. You know, once you get cool with Dell, you can go to her house.
Right.
Because they also had zebra paper wall in the kitchen.
No way.
Yeah. So very, okay, anyways. So this great experience. And when I went back to France, it's became kind of like my one goal to go back to the U.S. I think I just fell in love with my independence at the time. And also was trying to like, you know, learn to deal with all of the dysfunctionalities of my family, you know, being away just was an easy way. So, you know, I worked and started going to school, and then through my university, I got a chance to come to the United States. I did an exchange program. So that was in Indiana. So I lived in Bloomington, Indiana for about 5 years, going to school, and then met my husband, who is from the West Coast. So we decided to move to the West Coast about 4 years ago. And so I had been involved with radio back in Bloomington, and so I decided to also be involved with radio here.
Right. Okay. Well, that's great.
Love that story.
So you're listening to Bread and Roses. I'm Mary Postlewaite. We're going to take a short musical break. Thank you for listening. You're listening to Bread and Roses. I'm Mary Postlewaite. So, Delphine, what would be one thing that you could tell somebody that would be really great to learn about France?
Okay. Well, I think that the one thing that I want people to know about France is that the French language is not romantic. So, just to break the stereotypes, okay? So it's been, you know, to a certain extent a struggle being a foreigner, you know, in this country, even though now I'm actually an American citizen, but I still don't feel like one because people don't make me feel like one. Because people say things such as, you know, oh, where is this accent from? And so accent means foreign, right? Automatically, they don't think you could have been naturalized or anything like that. And also, lots of people have lots of stereotypes, right, about French people. So so the biggest one, the one that I encounter most of the time, is people ask me, please speak French to me. It's such a romantic language. And so what I do is I usually curse at them. And they're like, oh, it sounds so good.
Oh, my gosh.
So that's the one thing that I want people to know about France is that, you know, the French language is super complex. We curse a lot. It's actually very culturally acceptable to use cursing. I mean, of course, it's like limited for children, you know, like people don't really like that, but... It's just one of the things that, yeah, the French language is super complex, and yes, there are love words, and it can sound romantic at times, but, yeah, just, you know, delve a little deeper when you encounter somebody of French descent, instead of just asking them to speak French. I also feel like a token, you know? And then, like, people want to go to, like, you know, have some sexual ideas, and then I'm like, okay, I'm done with you.
Wow.
Right. Okay. That's great. You know, I was born in Washington State. Nothing special there. but I have always wanted to travel to France because I've always liked the French culture more than just the language. Because I always thought that the language was so sexy, I did actually hear them cussing. And when you cuss in French, you know you're cussing in French. Just like if somebody's cussing in Spanish, you know that that's what they're doing. So it is a little different. But I've always been excited by France. France.
Well, and I would say that the culture, yes, thank you for saying that. I didn't mean to be rude, but every time I get an opportunity to break the stereotypes, I just jump on it. Because yes, France is like super culturally amazing. And yes, there is kind of like in the United States, a mainstream French culture, but then there's also huge diversity of subcultures. Most of them are regional, right? Like I explained when I first started explaining where I was from, like my culture is Provençal. And so I used to speak the language when I was a child. You know, I used to like dress the way my grandmother would make me the outfits, you know, and we would go to the folk performances, you know, so it's like folk dancing and folk, you know, music, etc. And it's very communal, you know, and so there's all of that cultural aspect that is super, super diverse. There's so many different regions in France that have dialects. And it's really surprising because when you think of France, it's the size of Texas, right? And you could ride through Texas and it would be a little different, you know, very like dry and desertic on one end, and then maybe, you know, when you go to the north, it's a little bit greener, etc. But if you were to travel to France, you would see a huge diversity of landscapes, right? Like the difference in climate is huge from, you know, whether you're on the sea or whether you're inland or whether you're like, and we are also surrounded by different waters. So there's Channel Sea in the north, crossing over Britain. There's the Atlantic onto the west side of France. And then the south is the Mediterranean Sea. So cultures are different and huge.
Right on. Jordan, is your family from here also, the U.S.? Right on.
From what I know. I can't trace back, you know, further than my great-grandparents, you know,
and it's... There's that new DNA thing.
Yeah, when you like swab your cheeks or whatever and send it in,
cultural
and it costs
DNA.
Like $400.
You know, you might think you're black, but you're really Asian.
Right.
You don't even know it. That's great. Well.
Which also explains the complexity of race in the U.S., right?
Absolutely.
Because you look black and you are black in the eyes of most folks, which means that you... You know, unfortunately, are kind of like a victim as well of, you know, the stereotypes there.
Right. Yeah. Well, we've been talking to Jordan and to Delphine a little bit about who they are and where they're from. So let me tell you a little bit about who I am and where I'm from. Mm-hmm. I was born in Washington State, and we were poor. I'm what you call trailer trash, mm-hmm. For lack of better words. I don't really like that, but yeah, that's what people can identify with. Literally in a trailer court. It was fun though, because we had blackberry bushes and we could bake pies, and it was really fun. Mm-hmm. My childhood up till about age 13 or so was, you know, up and down. Had a lot of good times at the beach and things like that, but behind our closed doors, things mm-hmm. went on. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I had to kind of deal with that. When I got older, about 13 or so, I started to model for John Casablanca. So I had that going on, and it was doing really good. And
we
I
were
happy.
All famous, man, at one point.
It was going really good, and my dad decided that it wasn't the right thing for me. So from that point on, my rebellion became...
Started.
Oh, man, just out there. My parents couldn't handle me. I was the black sheep of the family. So, you know, it went on and on. I was in and out of group homes and whatever, whatnot. Got in a lot of trouble later on in my teens and early 20s, having babies, mm-hmm. having, you know, running the streets, doing all the opposite things that you guys probably did. But, you know, it all led me to where I am today. I traveled around a lot when I was... younger, early 20s or so, I traveled mm-hmm. throughout the United States doing different things. I have 6 children. My oldest will be 25 and my youngest is 13. No more for me. I have 1 grandchild. I'll be 42 this year. It's wonderful. I love it. What else? What else do you guys need to know about me? There's really not a whole lot to tell.
I love that you say that you like being 42. Tell us, what is it that you like about, you know, having matured to this age? Know,
I like it. Well, number one, being a grandmother at this age mm-hmm. and having the children that I have is wonderful. I like it, even though mm-hmm. I've struggled with my kids. I enjoy it. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm a young... hip grandma, mm-hmm, you know. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I definitely, the way I look at myself, I don't look at myself as being 42. Mm-hmm. You know, I look in the mirror and I'm like, I don't feel like I look like I'm 42. I don't feel like I act like I'm 42. But mm-hmm. really, what is 42? Mm-hmm. You know, it's really kind of just a number. Mm-hmm. But I enjoy looking at my friends, and they're older. And they're like, you're what? Mm-hmm. You have how many kids? Mm-hmm. And to see the look on people's faces when they find out is just, it's great to me. Mm-hmm. I love it. Mm-hmm. I love the way people look at me. On top of the fact that I'm almost 6'2". So they look at me and it's like, I got all these different components. Okay. But yeah, so 42 is a wonderful age for me.
Yeah.
I liked being in my 40s. I kind of dreaded it at first. Like, oh my God, I'm going to be 40. That's mm-hmm. old. But... now that I'm past 40, I'm mm-hmm. like, you guys just don't even know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel like I'm in the prime of my life.
You know, that's funny because, you know, my parents said the same thing when they were in their 40s. Like, it's just starting. Like, I'm having a good time. Like,
when you're in your 20s, you know, you live life.
You're still finding yourself.
Right. You're still mm-hmm. finding yourself. Then you hit 30. And for a woman, I don't know about you guys, but for a woman, for me, when I hit 30, I was like, I'm no longer 20-something. Mm-hmm. Now I'm the older woman, mm-hmm. you know, so, mm-hmm. oh yeah, she's the older woman because I'm over 30. But now mm-hmm. that I hit 40, I'm like, I like this. Mm-hmm. I don't feel 40. I feel like I'm back 20s again. You know, I can do whatever I want to do and I don't have to worry about the consequences because I'm 42 and I can do what I want.
Right, right. That's awesome.
And I know Jordan is not yet to the 30.
Oh, yeah, no.
She's got a little wells to go.
I do.
But I would say when I'm 33, so I turned 30 not too long ago, and I would say that for me, it was a relief. because I finally became okay with pursuing my own dreams and desire versus still trying to pretend that my dreams and desires were, you know, your typical, you know, what society kind of expects of you, like get the house, get married, get the children, etc. So, you know, I was already married. You know, it was never really part of my ambitions, you know, to have lots of children or, you know, to have a house. I mean, it was when I was like, you know, in my teens.
Either.
Yes. And so I understand that, right? But then it became when I was 30, then all of a sudden it became, whatever happens, happens, you know, like I'm good. Right. I'm strong and I know who I am finally. Right. I'm strong in my beliefs. I believe in myself and my abilities to, you know, make the right decisions for what comes my way. So it was kind of a relief, you know, be like, okay, you know, I got this.
I got this. Right. Yeah, I feel that. It's kind of like that for me, too. You know, you just kind of feel like you're a grown up now. I'm a grown up.
So even though you've been a grown up, you know.
So what advice would you guys give someone of my age?
Well, you know, I think probably the best advice that I've ever heard is so simple, and it's to follow your gut. When your stomach tells you something's not right, 98% of the time, it's not right. So follow your first mind, and that's probably one of the most simple but one of the most effective things that I've ever been taught.
Interesting. You know? Okay.
I would actually suggest also something very similar, which is don't get too caught up in the goals. Enjoy the ride. You know, the goals, you might get there, you might not, right? Sometimes things happen. And also I kind of learned them the hard way, you know, because I was, you know, getting my master's degree and, you know, I had all these plans and then my father died unexpectedly over the summer and I had to postpone, you know, even my graduation and all of that. And, you know, it was really hard for me at first because, you know, it was kind of pushing my schedule out and then until I finally, like, you know, let go of all this control and ask myself, Delphine, why are you so concerned about getting these things done? Life is not about, you know, what you leave behind you. It's about actually enjoying what happens, you know? And so I stopped, you know, and really, and also reflected because, you know, I had lived abroad for a number of years at that point and, you know, I just lost my dad, you know, all these years that I could have lived with him, this and that, you know, so a lot, you know, went through my mind, and then that's when I decided having goals is great, you know, know what you want to do, challenge yourself to, you know, learn new skills and get somewhere, but make sure that you spend, you know, enough time really looking at the path that it's going to take you to get there and that you give yourself some room to enjoy that path as well, that you're not just all focused on, you know, career and all of this, because it might happen, but it might also not. Something in the way, you know, might, you know, just stop you in your tracks. And how are you going to cope with that, right? So I'm very thankful that I got this lesson pretty early in life. And so, yeah. Enjoy the ride.
I actually really received that, and I say that because I am the type of person to be like, okay, I want to be married by 25, and then I want to have kids before I'm 30. Don't want kids after 30. You know, I want to be set in my career. I want a house by this age, you know, and I feel like I also model my parents' relationship, and they've been married for 26 years, and it's just like, I want that, you know? And they did that in that kind of manner, and it's like, Jordan, your life is completely different, you know? It's a whole different time and all that, you know? And but I think that in the society that we're in now, everything is going fast pace and you got to hustle and, you know, in order to survive in this kind of world. And but I also think it's so crucial that every day you're waking up and you're doing something that you love, because like you said, it's not about what you live, like, leave behind. It's enjoying every day that you lived, you know, because we only get one life. And if I'm doing something just for money, and not for the enjoyment of it, yeah. you know, I'm going to be laying on my deathbed.
You might be
not
rich,
happy.
But you'll be miserable.
Right, right. Yeah.
And also, my parents also were in a very long-term relationship, and mm-hmm. I also wanted this for myself, but also, like, I understood how much work it is, right? So this is also about prioritizing your relationships, right? So mm-hmm. that you are investing in the folks that you live with on a daily basis, whether they be your partner, mm-hmm. your best friends, your coworkers, your children. Mm-hmm. If you invest in actually cherishing and making sure yes. that this is a healthy relationship that makes you want to go to work or go home every night, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Versus like, no, we have to like get all of this done because next year we're buying the house. Mm-hmm. right. You know? Mm-hmm.
Keep your goals and your dreams in mind, but you know, if something doesn't happen by the time you have wanted it to happen, mm-hmm. don't be disappointed.
Right.
You know, just tell yourself, okay, well, I guess I got to work a little harder, but it'll be okay. Mm-hmm. You mm-hmm. know, I struggled for a long time trying to make those around me happy all the mm-hmm. time. I didn't want people to be disappointed in me. I didn't, you know, I wanted them to look at me as a good person and whatever. And I got to the point in my life where I was like, I have to live for me. Mm-hmm. I have yep. to do things that make me happy. Mm-hmm. If I'm not happy, I can't have my kids happy. You know, the person I'm with won't be happy. Mm-hmm. You know, so live for you. Mm-hmm. Do the things that you want to do and do them for you, not yeah. for somebody else.
Right.
Not because that's what society wants you to do
right.
or because your parents did it. Mm-hmm. Do it because that's something that you want to do. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. And yeah, like Delphine said, love every minute of it.
Right.
Because life can be a great joy. It's got ups and downs, but try to look for the positive in everything.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Everything has a silver lining. Mm-hmm. Every bad aspect of life has a silver lining. Mm-hmm. And if you look for it and you run with it, your life is just that much easier.
Yeah.
So.
It really is.
Yeah.
Respect. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Jordan, for this great question. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so for our listeners, I want you to know who we are. We're simple, everyday people, just like you are. We listen to the radio. We may or may not watch TV. Mm-hmm. Some of us like what we do. Some of us do it just because there's nothing else to do. You know, so I hope you enjoy hearing about us. And mm-hmm. I enjoy telling you guys about who we are. So you're listening to Bread and Roses. I'm Mary Postlewaite. We're going to take a short musical break. Listening to Bread and Roses. I'm Mary Postlewaite. So is there anything that either one of you would like to add, talk about?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that I'd love to talk about like radio mm-hmm. as and also the collective, right? Because I think that one of the things that this collective has really helped me realize is the power of women. Mm-hmm. And not just like the power of a woman, right? Mm-hmm. But also kind of like our collective consciousness to a certain extent. Not only do we have a common experience, you know, unfortunately living in a patriarchal society, mm-hmm. but I think that we also have a common history of power. And so for me, I think that the collective has helped me understand First of all, my connection to all the women in my life, right? Starting with my grandmother and my mother and my aunts and my cousins and all the mm-hmm. other females that have really been influential and supported me, you know, in just incredible ways, but ways that are very often kind of erased by the society mm-hmm. because we kind of put the emphasis on other things, right? So like being successful means, you know, having cars, having a good job and having all of this, right? When women work a lot in the background to like, you know, cohesion and family wealth, you know, mm-hmm. not just like wealth as money, but, you know, just culture and richness and, you know, traditions and recipes and mm-hmm. all of that, right? And so I think that because I'm like really strong-headed, like I just, you know, I have a kind of a personality where I believe I can do whatever I want, mm-hmm. you know? So for a very long time, I had never really conceived that in fact I was who I was also because of, you know, my ancestors and the people before me, and especially the women in my life, because my family is very matriarchal. Right, like, you know, I was raised by my grandmother. You know, mothers just have a very, very central central place, even though, you know, my culture was very sexist. So it's a lot of confusion, which I did not really fully understood until I came to the Brown Roses Collective. So I feel that that radio has an incredible power, but then when it's radio that's shared, right, airwaves that's shared among, you know, a group of women who come together once a month and you know, have some conversations and also come to the station once a week to bring, you know, very professional, high-quality public affairs programming to KBOO. I think I'm just very honored to be part of this legacy of mm-hmm. the Bread and Roses Collective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Me too. Growing up listening to KBOO, you know, when I was younger, it was here. So I've known about KBOO all my life, and it's an honor for me to be actually here on the mic mm-hmm. now mm-hmm. in my life thinking that this would never happen. I have been on the radio before many years ago, but it was just, well, one-time thing. I was a guest, and that was that. Never thought that I would still be wanting to be on the radio, and mm-hmm. here I am on the radio. It's great. I love it. Mm-hmm. So
I love how diverse Bread and Roses is.
It is, very.
You know? I think that's awesome. Like, we all have a story, and I think this was a great topic, Mary, just to get to know each of us. You know, we each had a very, very different story, and I love that. Mm-hmm. You know, I love learning about other cultures.
Well, and so, Jordan, I'm very curious about you. You talk about wanting to explore more of the experience of Black women. Mm-hmm. Talk about a little bit some of the topics that you are interested in covering, and why is it that we, you know, you want to do that? You do not find it anywhere else. What's the thing?
I think that my interest in exploring and meeting Black people in the Portland community in particular, since this is where I reside, just to hear their experiences. And, you know, it's always that, you know, head nod when we see each other. You know, I think it's just like a code saying, you know, we're here, you know, hi, how you doing, kind of thing. And I think that it's just so important that we stay connected and that we are always available to meet up and allow each other to explore different resources out here in Portland. You know, when I first moved out here, I was looking for hair salons, you know, and that's something that is difficult to look for within the Black community. You know, not everybody knows this, but, you know, black women, they get their hair done by black stylists. You know, it's a whole nother ball field dealing with our kind of hair.
Well,
you know?
Just like white women get their hair done by white
exactly,
women a lot of
exactly.
the time.
And, you know, it's not a racial thing at all. It's just, it's a cultural thing, you know. I mean, you know, I don't go to every black woman either, but it's just knowing the hair texture, knowing how to deal with it. And it's just so important to connect. And for me, you ask, why do I long for that? I don't know. There's just something about just having a connection with people who have the same experience, you know. And I wouldn't say that I'm against any other race, and I'm not all for creating relationships with people from other cultures, because I love learning about other cultures for sure. But, you know, just with the incidents that's going on with the shooting that happened in South Carolina, you know, we can't ignore those kind of situations. And I'm not going to ignore the fact that racism still exists and that I need to make sure that if anything goes down, you know, that I have people I can call, and in Portland, if something were to ever happen, you know, we're on it and we can discuss, see how we can move forward with it. I don't know. It's just, I don't know. It's just a connection that I just need wherever I am. If that makes
sense. Yeah, it sounds to me, this is definitely a connection that I can relate to in the sense that I'm also very interested in connecting with the community where I reside and being involved and engaged, you know. I think that this is also how we can, commit to where we are, right? I feel that lots of people have just a vision of living somewhere that's comfortable and easy for them, right? Like people usually think that way, instead of, okay, this is a great community that I want to jump into and be able to contribute also with some of my skills. And I'm sure you will find all of that and more in Portland. There's definitely lots of folks that are wanting to be active and that would welcome your leadership.
Right.
So, and I also just want to say for the Bread and Noses Collective, how important it is to have that diversity and that variety of voices. You know, if we understand our space as a space for women and for feminist perspectives, I think that that it's super important that people are aware that there's not just one way to be a woman in this country. There's actually not only one way to be a feminist either. And I think that's what the Bread and Roses Collective does. And this amazing idea that Mary had to have us come together and talk a little bit about
who we are
and why we're doing radio and what's up.
And as with all of us, you know, everybody has a story to tell and everybody has a past. But we can't change what's gone on in our past. But we can make our futures better. So, you know, whatever knowledge that we have as women through the collective, we can share with others and make our futures better and help them make their futures better.
And also this is space that has been passed on for like almost 40 years at this point. That's kind of huge.
Right.
Women to women, as I was, you know, mentioning that, you know, the collective helped me really make these connections between this kind of broader sisterhood, you know, that exists of the women experience. And the knowledge of knowing that women were here before me thinking about preserving this space for me makes me feel really good, right? And also makes me want to preserve this space for the next generation.
Absolutely. So, my daughter will be doing radio also. So, I'm definitely there with you, Delphine.
Yeah.
You know, we got to make our futures better for our young people, like Jordan and like my daughter. You know, we have to pay that mentorship right there for them.
Very true.
Well, I mean, we're on the topic of race, which I didn't mean for it to get there, but how have you dealt with your kids and them being...
Well, I've lost friends over the fact that I have biracial children.
Mm.
Well, they weren't really friends in the first place, if that's going to be an issue. But I've encountered quite a bit of racism towards my children. And I've fought for my son, being segregated in his school, being discriminated against because of, in my eyes, the fact that he's the little brown boy, you know. So I've dealt with that a lot, even in my family. My father doesn't like the fact that I, well, he's passed away now, but he didn't like the fact that I had biracial children. It was not something that he believed in. So I felt that throughout my life a lot. I've experienced the racism with my children at restaurants. You know, just kids being kids and vroom with their car. And, you know, people talk about him being black, not using that word, you know. And I've had to literally get up out of my booth and go over and be like, excuse me, is there a reason why you're calling my two-year-old son? You know, and it made me who I, it made me know the things that I know today and be the way I am because all of those stupid people in my life that had all those dumb ideas about the fact that my son was this because he's darker color, I just feel like I want to make a way where my children can be looked at as human and not black or brown or, you know, I want them to be looked at as a human or a boy or a girl. I don't I don't want them to say, oh, you're a little black kid. Oh, no, your hair's too whatever.
That's a whole nother conversation.
It really is. But at the same time, I think that also talking about the woman over in Washington who was pretending to be black.
Yes.
I think that there was, you know, it's a you know, just a great point to bring this here because I think that this is the point that she is missing so crucially, right? Is that being black is not just about, you know, what you look like, right? And there is an experience, and if you're not able to acknowledge that, if you're not able to acknowledge the common history, one of, you know, huge, incredible trauma, and respect that, I think that's hugely problematic.
Right.
Like I said a little bit, I had, you know, this idea of, I really like Native American spirituality, and here is, you know, when I was faced, because some Native people, like, came to me and were like, sorry, little French girl, you can never be Native. And here is why. This is what being Native means. It means being a citizen of a tribe. It means being culturally affiliated. It means having, you know, lived through this culture, knowing the traditions, having the roots, etc. I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Yes, what an obscene idea I had that could ever be me. But I think that that I then was able to address what was missing for me, right? So that I could find my own way. I think in the Native community, there's lots of conversations about how, you know, the white people, the Europeans, before they did it to the Natives, they did it to themselves. You know, they crushed their culture. They crushed, you know, a lot of a more tribal and more spiritual way of living for a more capitalist way of living, right? So there's always a trade-off, and I think it's super important to realize that. However, as white people in America, we are never asked to look at that. We're never asked to look at the consequences of colonialism and imperialism on white folks, right? Not that this should take away from looking at the acts, those consequences on, you know, the people of color and the communities that are being discriminated against. Yes, absolutely. We need to look at all of this and understand, you know, what reparations also means, because it has to come with the responsibility. But then also we need to start looking in depth at, you know, in the Native community, there is this idea of blood memory that you kind of like, you know, remember what your ancestors have done. Well, if you are a white person like me, and I think about my blood memory, it's one of war, and it's one of killing, and it's one of murder, you know?
Who wants to remember that?
Well, who wants to remember that? But unless we actually remember that, you know, and we actually take on the responsibilities that come with it, and understand that the guilt that we feel is not one on our individual. It's not that we are a bad person,
right?
It's, you know, unfortunately, it's just super complicated, situation.
It is.
But pretending that the situation is only one-sided or non-existent, that we should not talk about race, and or that because I'm a white person, then I have the privilege to do everything I want, including be a black person or be a native person, then that's hugely problematic, in my opinion.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because it is really frustrating, just based on my own personal experience. When, you know, in growing up in school, and I would be in class and we'd learn about slavery and you know, what white people did to black people or what white people did to Native Americans, like, I come out of class just angry. And like I told you guys, like, I went to a predominantly white school, and there's just this hate that just overcomes me. And every person I look at, I'm like, don't talk to me, don't talk to me. You know what I mean? And it was like a self-check, like, Jordan, you know, you can't think like that. You know, they are not responsible for their ancestors' actions. They themselves have not conducted any hate towards you. You know what I mean? But it is so hard as a people, you know, sometimes, because you just don't know, you know, just looking at a person, if they like you or not, or if they respect you. And I know that's something that, you know, you, Dell, are going to have to suffer. You know, nobody would know that you have educated yourself about the black community and the Native American community and what other cultures you've looked into. But it's just this automatic, like, stigma, like, I don't know what kind of interaction to get out of you, you know, because I don't know your background. But I don't know. I think just everyone just needs to be more open-minded and, you know, keep your guard up until you really get to know a person. And, you know, it's unfortunate that it has to be that way, but
It is unfortunate. At the same time, I think that there is room for leadership like yours, Jordan, right? Of actually being able to hear. I mean, you know, when I hear you say, you know, the anger, to be honest, I was angry like you. So I think it's actually a normal reaction when you're exposed to what actually happened, to be angry, to be super frustrated, not knowing what to do, because yes, how are we going to, like, you know, repay this incredible? But here's the problem that I see. The problem is that not only have we not looked in depth at what happened, not only have we not, you know, come up with any ways to have reparations for anything that has been done, but we are continuing to do it today. Like, the system in which we live is a system that's global, but it's a system of global racism and global oppression, right? Because the people who live in, you know, the people that are the darkest on the planet are the ones that are the poorest.
Yes.
That suffer the most.
Yes.
So I think for me, like, that's where I say, that's it. We don't have no more excuse to not look into it, because currently we are prioritizing capitalism and gain and greed over everybody and everything else, including our planet, including, you know, our bodies. So I think it's time to stop playing and pretending to be something that we are not, and actually start looking inside also, instead of pointing fingers.
Right. I agree. Yeah. I agree.
So you're listening to KBOO 90.7 in Portland. And this is Mary, Delphine, and Jordan. Thank you for listening. Bread and Roses will be back next week on Friday from 6 to 7. Be sure to tune in. KBOO 90.7 Portland.
Thank you, Mary.
Thank you.
And thank you, Jordan and Delphine.